is episode 306 of the Seahawkers podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Hey, man. Interesting game this last week, but I think the most I can say about it is a win's a win. Here we are. We'll talk about it.
It was a win. The Seahawks are 3-0 for the first time going back to 2013. And that's a good start to the season. I'm happy about that part of it. And I'm happy about really the show that Russell Wilson is putting up, because 14 touchdown passes in three games. No other NFL quarterback has done it in the history of the NFL. Very impressive. Gotta love our quarterback, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, really, he is the heart and soul of the entire team now. And we know that. We've known that for a couple of years. I guess the tough part about watching Russell's amazing performances is to know the rest of the team has devolved so much that we don't just need Russell to save us just in the fourth quarter now. He has to save us from the entire
catfish
game. And that's what we saw this last week. I don't know if he can keep that up. I don't know if you can tell by now. I'm very frustrated by what I saw on the field this last Sunday.
I am starting to turn the corner just toward embracing the slogan and recognizing that this is going to be the season of the slogan for Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks. And it's because I just don't have any confidence that it can be Seattle winning in any other way this season. We're seeing improvement from the offensive line in terms of their pass blocking, that statistic of pass block win rate. That is something that we've never seen from a Seahawks offensive line before. So I'm going to choose to be excited about that. And I'm going to be excited about the ability to create turnovers on the defense, because that is what this defense is going to need. If they can't stop teams, they need to be able to create turnovers.
Well, and I would kind of rip on our defense here if it weren't that the entire league has forgotten how to play defense. Like, that's how it's been these first 3 weeks of the season. I asked you on the last show, I was like, so what team is playing good defense? And you were like, well, you know, the Ravens or the Bills. And we just watched those defenses get torched. Right. Like, I'm dead serious. Nobody is playing defense in this league right now. And this is the reason why I can't stand this so much is we all applauded and everybody was so excited. Chiefs versus Rams a few years back on Monday Night Football is the future of football. It's great football and it's garbage football, and defense equated to just what you were saying. How many turnovers can you create? Cause that's the only way you'll get a stop. And that's where we are. And it's unbelievably maddening and frustrating to watch the ilk of Dak Prescott and company tear us up. I mean, what a joke.
I don't know if I'm that frustrated about Dak and company tearing up this team, because we talked about it going into it with their talented receiving core. And I think Dak is a talented quarterback. He's strung together some really nice games. I thought we could expect more from the Seahawks secondary. And there were some injuries, yes, in this game that, you know, Quentin Dunbar, he wasn't able to play because of a knee injury. We saw Jamal Adams go down because of a groin injury in this game. But still, Quandre Diggs was back. You had Ugo Amadi out there who, man, if we had five guys as defensive backs playing like Ugo, then I think we'd be okay.
Oh, man. Ugo's the only guy interested in playing defense right now on the Seattle Seahawks. In the secondary, anyways. I mean, yes, Jamal Adams has been good in games, but I mean, honestly, he's not really playing much in the secondary.
He's playing up on the line of scrimmage or in the box.
Which is fine. I don't mind the, you know, change in creativity there and trying to at least generate a pass rush. But I think maybe one thing that might help going forward is it seems like the Seahawks maybe stumbled into a couple guys that they were refusing to play in the first two games that actually give us a spark when it comes to the pass rush and getting after the quarterback and even just making plays in Shaquem Griffin and Alton Robinson. They came out and made big plays towards the end of the game. And that was at least encouraging to me.
Let's go to that last drive for the Seahawks, because once again, it was the Seahawks defense that had to make a play at the end of the game. And so I think that we're at least fortunate that they are making plays in those final moments. And we did get to see on a three-man rush, Alton Robinson getting his very first sack with the Seattle Seahawks.
Prescott takes the snap. Again, a three-man rush. He gets hit. He gets hit and goes down. Robinson there to make the sack at about the 25-yard line. And now the Cowboys use their final timeout. The perfect time for a sack. Way to go, young man. Alton Robinson gets the sack for the Seahawks.
Yeah, it was a fantastic play by him. He had a great motor and effort the entire game. And then, like I said, then you had Keem come in as well.
He was in coverage. He was rushing the passer. He was all over. And that was really cool to see from a guy who had been on the practice squad and gets called up to the active roster. Yeah, without the injuries, he's not in this game.
Yeah, they just were telling him, no, you're not good enough to play. And they were saying the same thing to Alton Robinson, too. He was an active the first couple games. And it's like, wait a second. You get them in the game, and all of a sudden, it looks like we got something here. And it's almost like they refuse to put the guys that you heard about in camp, too. You heard all about Keem making plays. You heard all about Alton Robinson making plays. And it's no need for you. We're just going to go with, a bunch of has-beens and Bruce Irvin, who's going to get hurt, and a bunch of other guys who really have no interest in getting after the quarterback. And we'll just stress out our secondary, give up a zillion freaking yards and touchdowns, and ask Russ to save us for four quarters instead of just one, and win every game still by just one possession. But yeah, at least we scored, 45,000 points. Like, the whole point was, well, let Russ start out early so that we don't have to rely on him late to come through with heroics, so that we can blow teams out instead of play all these close one score games. Let's play that way. It'll be mind blowing. It'll be totally different. The only difference is the total score. The margins are the exact same. The Seahawks are playing exactly the same at the end of the day, points wise, as they did before. This is not a better outcome. It's just going to get Russ either killed, or we're going to lose a bunch of games that are 35-31. You can't just play one side of the freaking ball, man.
So where is it going wrong in your mind? Because yes, up 30
the offense.
Up 30 to 15, they should be able to run the ball and run clock and march down the field, right? Because a team like the Cowboys defensive line, they weren't big in stopping the run.
Right. And so if you're not consistently running the ball, guess what you're not going to be good at? If you're not doing it week in, week out.
Sure.
You can't just turn it on and turn it off like a switch. So you get up 30 to 15. You can't really run the ball and just take it to them and win by three scores. So what you do instead is you continue this pinball freaking offense, right? That you're off the field in a heartbeat every drive. And then your defense is right back out there. There's no wonder they've given up a zillion yards and a zillion points. Ask yourself, Brandon, every high-flying offense you've watched through the history of the NFL, have their defensive been good or bad?
I'm glad you brought this up. I was saving this for later, but I did want to do some research in this going into the show, because this has been a talking point about the Seahawks defense being as bad as it is. I think it's been plastered everywhere. No defense has allowed more passing yards through 3 weeks, and they've allowed almost 1,300 yards, which it's a lot. But it was interesting to me looking on this list of the good teams and the bad teams that have allowed more than 1,000 passing yards. Pro Football Talk, they put an article out where there's been 18 teams that have given up 1,000 passing yards or more over those first three games of the NFL season. Seattle's number one, of course. We've established that. Number two, the 2011 New England Patriots, which was a really good team that ended up going 13-3. They made it all the way to the Super Bowl. Now, they lost the Super Bowl that year, but they made it all the way to the Super Bowl. The three teams that they faced, Chad Henne of the Dolphins, week one, Philip Rivers, so you can kind of understand that. He throws the ball a lot when he was playing for the Chargers. And Ryan Fitzpatrick with the Bills back in 2011. In each of those games, the New England Patriots led by two touchdowns or more. So there's some correlation here. The difference is that Tom Brady was in the game, throwing it all over the place. And the quarterbacks they faced, again, I mentioned Henne, Rivers, and Fitzpatrick. We faced Prescott, Ryan, and Cam Newton. Two of those guys have been MVPs.
Yeah, that's all fine and dandy. But look for the beard to go off this week as well. He tears up terrible defenses. It's what he does. He's made a lot of money doing that.
Yes, and we're going to have Sam Marcoux on from the Perfectville podcast to break down that matchup with the Dolphins.
Right. And look, I appreciate the research you did there, but it's not the yards.
I have more. I'm not even done. I was just giving you an opportunity to chime in.
Yeah, it's not the yards that they're giving up to these quarterbacks that bothers me, because as you know, yards don't really freaking matter.
Yards don't matter.
So it's the points, dude.
Okay.
They're giving up nearly 29 points a game.
They are giving up nearly 29 points a game, but when you look at some of the other teams on this list, it really does differentiate somewhat in terms of the number of points they've given up. And I think when you look at the number of points that the Seahawks defense has given up this year, there's 10 more teams that are worse than them. So while they've given up a lot of yards, there's still 10 worse teams at allowing points in the NFL this year. And so I think you can point to that and say, well, if you're solely going on points, then considering the quarterbacks they faced, maybe they've done an average job in comparison to the rest of the NFL.
Tough to consider an average job when you're ranking in the bottom third of the league. But hey, what do I know about any of that? It's not good. Like people,
it's the very tippy top of the bottom third. It's almost average.
You think that's going to get better or worse going forward?
I'm saying that the quarterbacks that they're going to be facing moving forward, and while Fitzpatrick may fit into that lower tier of quarterbacks that are able to tear up a bad defense, I think it gets easier for the Seahawks secondary here on out when they're taking on quarterbacks in this league.
Well, they certainly have some gimmies in there, right? Now, the Dolphins actually, like you said, they actually do have a guy that I think can be a compiler here in score a little bit. It's kind of what he does. But when you play the NFC East and the AFC East as your out-of-division opponents, that's really going to help. There's no doubt about it. But does that, you know, the whole phrase, iron sharpens iron, right? So if you're not playing anybody that's any good, you know, as the Seahawks defense does throughout the remainder of the year, and short of your own division, of course, but out of your division, how are you ever going to get better? What's going to test you? What's going to actually get you to that next level? And maybe it's just health. Cause I know there's a lot of guys that are banged up, and I'm sure there's a lot of people yelling at their podcast device right now that we all half of everybody's hurt, but it doesn't feel like to me, that's the biggest issue within this. Is the injuries. It feels like there's other things at play. And I think it's the pace of play. And you listen to Pete Carroll's press conference after this game, he said something about the style of the game, his tone. He's dying on the inside too.
He's a defensive coach, and I can understand that bothering him. He also wants to be able to run the ball. I think that he should get some credit for his ability to perhaps adapt to this. And you know, maybe if Russell really feels like he needs this for his quest for greatness that he appears to be on and is talking about, let's see how it goes. It could end up like it does similarly with these other teams, because like I said, I looked at this list of all 18 teams that have had a defense allowing 1,000 or more passing yards. Three of those teams, including Seattle, have gone 3-0. And it wasn't the New England Patriots that I mentioned earlier. They lost a game to the Bills, that Fitzpatrick led Bills team that came back and ended up winning 34-31 after a shootout type game against New England. But they did go 13-3. They lost to a really good defense in the Giants that year. One of the two times that they lost to the Giants in the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
The other team that went deep into the playoffs and started off 3-0. It was the 2018 Kansas City Chiefs. They lost in the playoffs. And the 2011 Green Bay Packers, who went down to that same Giants team that ended up beating the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl that year.
Well, there you go. If history repeats itself here with the Seahawks, we're going to have the same thing that we had with the old offense, and that's a playoff loss.
Yeah. If history repeats itself, but
right,
the NFL's changing, Adam.
Yeah, I honestly don't think it's for the better. And look, I kind of wanted to lead with this and talk about the defense and
catfish
about that a little bit out of the gate, so that we could kind of end talking about the offense and, you know, the individual greatness that we're seeing display itself over there on that side of the ball. So I just wanted to get that off my chest first, because all I hear all over the talking head airwaves is how great this is. You know, Russ is going to be MVP. He's the best in the league, blah, 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 blah. And not one soul is really talking about the Seattle defense other than being like, well, they're banged up and not good.
I think you're starting to see people ask the question, though, of is defense all of a sudden obsolete in the NFL because of the way the start of the season, we've seen it around the NFL.
Yeah, it's struggling to say the least. And I don't know if it's a lack of talent at D coordinator. I don't know if it's just the idea that we've kind of come into a new era of football here where you saw the old statues that played the game the way it had been played for 70 years, the Peyton Mannings, Tom Brady's, Philip Rivers, Drew Brees, they're either out or on their way out. And all of the new breed of quarterback, the Russells, the Lamars, the Mahomes, you know, all the guys that play the position as a dual threat quarterback, a true dual threat quarterback who can light you up with their arm every bit as much as Peyton and Tom did, but they can also run around and kick your ass like Vic did. Mm-hmm. And so now you have all these teams that not only they're not adverse to the running quarterback, they've embraced the running quarterback and have tailored their offenses to it. And so now D coordinators are trying to catch up and they can't do it. You heard Pete Carroll, you've heard Bill Belichick for years talk about the thing they hated to see the most was a running quarterback because it was so hard to defend. And now you've got a zillion really talented guys playing quarterback that the teams have wrapped their arms around and they're going full throttle with it.
Going back to the list though, of these teams that have allowed big passing yards, there is a pretty interesting group in terms of recognizing that they're either really bad teams or there are very accomplished passing teams. You know, it is Seattle at number one, New England at number two, and the 2011 Green Bay Packers team at number seven. And then the rest of the teams are teams that went, you know, lost six or more games in a season.
Sure. And that makes some sense, right? I mean, there's a lot of teams that end up with big, you know, yards numbers in the passing game because they're down big and that's all they can do is throw Matt Ryan. And like, that's kind of where they are. And there's kind of stat patterns that way. So I'm not surprised to see half of them, you know, kind of be dumpster fire teams.
That 2018 Kansas City team, through the first three games gave up, more than 30 points a game over those first three games. And Seattle came in under 29.
You know what I wonder, Brandon, how many of those teams won a Super Bowl?
Yeah, I said zero. That was the one that's what I was looking for. And Okay. Yes, that is the unfortunate thing. That's why I don't think the yards matters, but I do think that the points per game matters. And if your defense has given up a lot of points, then it doesn't. That's not a team that's a Super Bowl winning team. And I know that's what we're going for. We want our team to win the Super Bowl. And it doesn't seem like if they can't get that part of their defense under control, then yes, it's going to be a playoff exit.
It is. I guess the one thing that is encouraging, though, I mean, the run defense has been pretty stellar. They actually took Zeke and bottled him up when he's looked pretty good to start the year. I thought they played very well.
They did. There was even a highlight of Zeke going down in the end zone. Brian Monet getting the credit for the safety.
Here comes the handoff to Elliott. He gets hit in the backfield. Does he go down in the backfield? He does. It should be a safety. No. They are going to bring it out. Did he have? The officials are going to talk about it. They're still talking. I thought he got hit and goes down. He does. It's a safety. The Seahawks make the tackle on Zeke Elliott in the end zone for the safety. Well, you know it's going to be looked at.
Ruling on the field is confirmed. Safety.
I was as confused as Rabel on this. There was no way that he got over the line. I guess you had Troy saying, well, maybe he fell on the ground and then rolled out of the end zone, but it looked like a safety. Why did you not call it faster?
Yeah, no kidding, man. The refs were off all night. I mean, they had some weird exchanges there throughout the game that drug on forever. And maybe this is a great play, and I'm glad you brought it up. It was kind of a microcosm of this game. This game was freaking weird. There was a lot of weirdness in it. The idea that, you know, they end up with a safety in the first quarter, and then they can't even decide if it's a safety. Then it is a safety. Then it's not a safety. Then it is a safety again. And I don't know, man, that whole first quarter was bizarre. This whole game was bizarre to watch. And I guess maybe if you're going to be optimistic, the thing to take out of it is that even though Russ and company were off, and they were just kind of off all night, like Russ wasn't quite as sharp. Lockett wasn't quite as focused and had, you know, the same hands that normally. And then you have DK Metcalf just straight up like quitting football play, like in the last third of it. Like it was weird from top to bottom. And they still scored 38 somehow.
That was weird. And yes, if we get 5 touchdown passes from our quarterback on a day where he's quote unquote off, I know Aikman had to comment on every pass that was not thrown perfectly into the wide receiver's hands. I'll take that all year long.
How jealous is Troy Aikman of Russell Wilson? Like, and what is it? Is it the fact that he can run? Is it the fact that he didn't have to, you know, lean on, you know, say Emmett Smith his entire career to be considered good? Like what is it? Like, why does Troy Aikman hate Russell Wilson like he does? Because he was taking drive-by shots like on every other play.
I got that impression too. I thought by the end of the game that Troy Aikman hates Russell Wilson, and I don't know why.
Maybe he's afraid that he's going to win more chips than him. I don't know.
He's got a pretty good lead on him so far.
He's got 2 more rings.
Yeah, that's
it.
I'd be happy with 2 more over the, even if Russell Wilson plays till 45, I'd be happy with 2 more.
I think it's in range. Like, I mean, I think it is.
I feel like that should be the number to shoot for.
Is the trifecta?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think everybody's thinking that at kind of a bare minimum with Russ at this point, right? Like, especially with the way that he's playing, but yeah, try taking shots all game. And again, with Russ being quote unquote off, and you know, a lot of those that he threw that ended up being incompletions. Well, the receivers were off a little bit too, because those should have been caught.
Uh-huh.
Like a lot of them should have been caught.
Yeah. The weirdest one, going back to some of the weird plays, the one where Greg Olsen, stepped out of bounds after he was pushed out of bounds, then he caught the ball, and then it looked like he may have scored a touchdown, but they didn't really review it for the fact that it was a touchdown. But
nope.
It was a very weird sequence. And have you ever seen that in an NFL game where a player gets pushed out of bounds and it's the illegal contact that they call, but yet he catches it and then they allow it as a catch? I don't know if I'd quite seen that before.
Oh, I've definitely seen it before. Yeah? I mean, yeah, it's not a very common play, but yeah, you get that. Like the whole thing is, were they forced out of bounds? Yes. Okay. Did they reestablish themselves? Yes. Well, then they can catch the ball. I've seen that debate happen many times throughout a season. You know,
yeah, I've mostly seen it around the reestablishing part, but not actually flagging the defender on the illegal contact part, I guess.
Well, they flagged him on it.
They did. Yeah.
And then they flagged Greg Olsen, and then they didn't understand how the rules work and then didn't review for a touchdown and then took 25 minutes to review it. I don't know what they were doing. I don't know, man. This whole game had a weird ass feeling to it. I mean, starting from the first drive where they end up going 3 and out. And I don't know about you, Brandon, but I was sitting there thinking, oh my God, this is going to be a dumpster fire today if it goes like this. This is same old Seahawks right here.
But it wasn't. They came back out and we got to see some more sexy deep ball from Russell Wilson, and this time going to Tyler Lockett.
Play fake by Russ. Stops. Looks, throws deep.
Hey, I'm Mr. Unlimited.
And I throw a sexy deep ball.
Man wide open. It's Lockett. He's in. Touchdown, Seahawks. The team that has given up a bunch of big plays just gives up another one to Russell Wilson from 43 yards out. Cowboys were still thinking about Chris Carson's run. And Russell Wilson loads up and drives it 43 yards to a wide open Tyler Lockett. The Seahawks on the board, 6-3.
Huge bomb. I mean, it's bombs away for us this year. I mean, he just wants to chuck the ball. And look, when you have receivers that are able to beat the defense as consistently as they have been, then sure, you do that. But you also saw, too, in the second half, the Cowboys shut that
catfish
down. Like, all of a sudden, it was like they went out on the street, found 4 different versions of Deion Sanders and suited them up in Cowboys uniforms and tossed them out there on the field in replacement of the guys they had started with. I don't know. I want to know and go back through this game and see what adjustment it is that they made that somehow made it so that the receivers couldn't find any openings because Russ would stand back there and, you know, bake three cakes and then still didn't have anybody open.
Oh, he loaded up to throw the deep ball multiple times in late in the third and the fourth quarter. And it didn't seem to be there. I'm yelling at him, just, you know, stop hitching and throw the dang football and, you know, overthrow him if you have to. Just get rid of it. Don't sit in the pocket and wait to get hammered.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was looking for it. I did notice that they started playing way off of DK as far as, you know, just allowing everything short to go his direction and being okay if they were going to give up something short to DK. And I guess they finally decided that after three touchdown throws to Tyler Lockett that they should actually cover him. So that's an important adjustment to make.
Yeah. No, they did that. Now, the thing about DK as well is it seems like that what helped the Cowboys defense is that Russell Wilson gave him a Brady-esque kind of freeze out there for about 2.5 quarters, like where he just wasn't going to look at him. He wasn't going to throw it to him. He wasn't going to do anything. DK gave up on that play and Russ froze him out for a couple quarters, just for good measure, because he did the good cop part, right? Uh-huh. When he came back to the sidelines and dapped him up a little bit. No, I got you. I'm coming back to you. And then he also gave him a little backup. You don't want to disappoint dad. Like, and he let it little brother know that was not okay. And he didn't see the ball for a while.
He didn't see the ball for a while. And I definitely got that feeling, at least, that that's what was happening on the field. But then Russell gives him the opportunity for redemption at the end of the game.
Russell looks, sets, has time. Going to throw to the end zone.
Hey, I'm Mr. Unlimited.
And I throw a sexy deep ball.
What? It's DK! He makes the catch! Touchdown! Seahawks! I couldn't see him for a second, and suddenly he flashes in the end zone, and it's DK Metcalf, and he, in fact, makes up for the play earlier. And it's only fitting, isn't it, that he's the guy who comes up with the big reception, the touchdown, with 1:47 left to play.
Oh, my God, so many mixed emotions when this play went down. And I'll run through them here real quick for you. Number one was, holy mackerel, did Brown and Shell block their asses off on that play?
Oh,
go back
Shell.
And watch it.
Yeah. I mean, Shell was one-on-one with Alden Smith for a good, I don't know how many seconds that it took Russell to throw the football, but he was locked in on Alden Smith.
Yeah, moved his feet awesome. Like, that was one of those things where you're like, Jermaine Ifedi could never do that. Like, ever.
I never saw Jermaine Ifedi ever do that.
No, that was super impressive. Dwayne Brown had a nice block on the backside as well. And then the other part of the emotion was like, oh, DK. All right. You know, because he gets the redemption, right? And you're excited about that. And then also the despair that followed directly after that, when you realize there's still like a 140 on the clock and they had all three timeouts. And all you can think is that was way too
catfish
fast. Like, this is going to be a nail biter going down to the end.
Yeah. So I wasn't the only one thinking that was way too fast. And I've played the clip twice now where we have Russell Wilson dropping a Mr. Unlimited into the highlight and no commentary from you on that.
I was just going to let everybody else kind of live with that and, you know, come up with their own feelings and thoughts on it. Because every time I hear him say, did he have another video where he talked about his Great Danes having unlimited diarrhea?
Yes, he did.
And so when he talks about Mr. Unlimited and he does it like that, all I can think of, because he said it the same way when he was talking about unlimited diarrhea. That's what I think every time.
But
I didn't want to put that image into everybody else's head that's listening to the podcast. I thought I'd leave that to them to interpret Mr. Unlimited however they want. But now that's out there, so you're welcome.
The other thing that was very nuanced about the way DK ran that route was at the very tail end of that, where he kind of led the receiver kind of slanting toward the back corner of the end zone. And then just as he went to catch it, he flipped his shoulders out to kind of protect the football. I thought that was a kind of a veteran type move from DK.
It is. And when you have that kind of frame, you need to be able to use your body that way. And it's not automatic. The guys are good at that. And you're watching growth out of him. And I mean, let's go back to the drop. And it's not even a drop. I guess it's more just the fumble.
Because he just, I guess he didn't think that the guy was going to come from behind, or maybe he thought he was already in the end zone. That was so weird, and it felt gross for me to agree with Troy Aikman, because, you know, a lot of people saying, oh, well, that's a learning moment for DK. You should never have to learn that as a professional football player. That should be, you should have that. And Pete talked about how this is something that they talk about, and they've given it a teaching moment from other people doing it. You should be able to see from other people making bad mistakes that this is a mistake that you never make as a professional football player.
Yo, the other mistake that should never have been made is Aikman never saying the words Leon Lett when that play happened. Like, because he watched
he
did, that happen.
He didn't Leon Lett it. He did not Leon. He was not taunting.
He wasn't taunting.
He was just jogging.
He was jogging. Yeah, he was dogging it. And that was super disappointing. I was sitting on top of a mountain where there's cell reception out there, and watching that on my tablet. And I think I yelled so loud that I scared the crap out of two bears. Like, no doubt about it. There's more bear poop in the woods now because of that. That is so freaking unacceptable. Like, this is not a learning moment. Like I said, that is unfreaking acceptable. Like, he should be fined for that. Like, he should. I can't believe Pete Carroll wasn't in his face when he got back to side. That would be one where I turned into a full on, Big Tuna, Bill Cowher, one of those guys. I would lose my
catfish
on a player if they did that under my reign. There's no doubt.
I think the embarrassment factor probably was enough, but you do, you know, it's almost like if dad doesn't yell at you when you go to the sideline, it even might make it a little bit worse. Like, you know, you screwed up, so you expect it, and then you don't get it. Really, what's worse?
Well, that's fine, but if you're going to do the I'm not going to talk to you about it routine, you still have to at least give him a prolonged dirty look as he's walking to the sidelines of just, you've got to be
catfish
and kidding me. Like,
yeah, kind of like when Blair Walsh missed that final field goal against Arizona.
Yes, a death stare. There needs to be at least one of those mixed in.
Yeah.
Yeah. But hey, look, if you're going to do it, look, the way that they kind of did go about punishing DK in the game itself, very Seattle, very passive aggressive, hey, no, it's okay, buddy. We'll come back to you. Then give him the freeze out for 2.5 quarters, only to be like, no, it's actually okay, buddy. Once he felt bad enough, that's so Seattle.
He did get him one throw that it was just a dart that ended up going off his hands on a third down play. Was that the one right before then they had to go to Greg Olsen on fourth down on the, okay.
Yeah. I want to say yes.
It feels right because it was, it was a short third down throw, and Russell actually got some praise, I think, from Pete Carroll for knowing exactly what to do, being so decisive in the moment and where to go with that throw, but also saying maybe don't throw it so hard.
Yep. And hey, look, another thing here is in that moment on a third and short and at the end of the game and at a decisive moment, unlike what they did a little earlier in this game and maybe say, I don't know, the game before, Russ didn't just go bombs
catfish
away on third and short. Like, he actually, made a football play and it tried to just kind of keep the chains moving and high percentage and all that. I like that. I like that. I want to see an adjustment made later in the game of not just, chuck it down the field as far as you can on mission critical third and shorts.
He was looking for kill shots all fourth quarter though, man.
Yeah.
Which I like the feeling that I get when I'm like, okay, here it comes. But then, if he ends up hanging on to it and not throwing it, there's like a little bit of disappointment too.
Well, the other end of that disappointment is he's not running it either.
No, that's true.
Yeah, it's like, hey, man, if you ran everybody off, and especially if they're in man, and they're all down the field, why aren't you going? Go. Like, make that decision. And maybe he is making the decision. Maybe the decision is, I'm waiting for this to pop open, man, because it's bombs away.
Yeah. Well, we did see Greg Olsen have one of his best days since coming to the Seahawks. He had 6 targets, 5 receptions, 61 yards, nearly had the score on the sideline there. And he had that big fourth down conversion for Seattle on that final scoring drive.
I saw somebody in the Discord chat mention something about this is why you bring in Greg Olsen. 100% right. Reliable veteran, knows what to do, where to be in the big moments. Glad he was there.
Russell Wilson now has more game-winning drives than Joe Montana or Jim Kelly, Adam.
I did not know that, and that's actually very, very impressive.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it is cool. And look, it's not going to change this year. I mean, I know we all thought, well, maybe we'll start winning these by bigger margins now. We won't have to have heart meds. Nope. Russell Wilson is going to rack up the stat, because that's what we call the, you know, game tying or winning drives in the fourth quarter stat that they always bring up at the end of the game. It's the stat.
The stat, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, he's going to be adding a lot of those. We may come out on the wrong side of a few of those too. And I actually kind of have a bad feeling about this Dolphins game that way. I think it's going to be another shootout, and that can be one of those rando games that Fitzpatrick wins for no reason.
Oh, it could be. It could be. What do you say we bring on Sam and preview this matchup with the Dolphins, Adam?
Right on, man. Sam's awesome.
Three receivers right. Prescott is going to look left. He gets hit again. He stumbles. He stays on his feet. Still looks. Throws to the end zone. It's intercepted. The ball is intercepted in the end zone. It's Neal who makes the pick in the end zone. And the Seahawks are going to hold off the Dallas Cowboys. How Dak Prescott was able to stumble away from a sure sack and still throw the ball in the end zone. And Neal, who was just activated today, makes the pick in the end zone, and the Seahawks are going to hold off the Dallas Cowboys. Wow, what a finish. The Seahawks defense steps up when they had to.
And joining us on the line is Sam Marcoux, Dolphins fan, or Dolphan, and the host of the Perfectville podcast. He's been on the show before. It's been a while, though, since we played those dirty, dirty Dolphins, and they're coming back. Or actually, we're going to them this time. Sam, welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks for having me. I think this is either my second or third time here on the Seahawkers podcast, and I look forward to this every single time, which isn't often, but thank you for having me, Adam, Brandon. Good to be here.
It's good to have you, and I know it has been a couple times. I definitely remember that the 2016 game where the Dolphins came to town, and it's because Ndamukong Suh stepped on our quarterback in that game. We don't have to worry about that this time. The other appearance, I think it was just like an off-season have you on for fun type appearance, and so it's not very often we get to have you on, because this matchup doesn't happen very often, and you have a very different team now 4 years later than I think the last time we talked in 2016.
Well, first of all, that 2016 game never happened, unless we want to talk about how Doug Baldwin was offensively pass interfering with every single pass that was thrown his way in that game. Or we could talk about how Kenny Stills dropped the game winning pass in that game, if we want to talk about that. But
I thought you didn't want to talk about that at the time, though. All of a sudden, that's a big deal that you want to talk about that?
I'm very mad. I'm still very mad about that, because I thought Kenny Stills was bringing that in, and I can remember turning around and just mocking every 12th man in that loud, loud stadium of yours. And then all of a sudden they're cheering. I'm like, I don't understand why you guys are cheering. He clearly got a touchdown. And then I turned around and he's walking back to the line of scrimmage. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. No bueno. So no, I don't want to talk about that anymore. But no, this doesn't happen very often. Like you said, NFC West, AFC East, Miami, Florida, Seattle, Washington, different sides of the continent, let's be honest, probably the longest flight that you can possibly have in the NFL. So the NFL doesn't really like to schedule these two teams against each other too often. So this is quite the treat for both of us, I think.
Well, the Dolphins fans have been treated to some early Fitz magic this season, especially, well, I guess just this last week against the Jaguars, getting the big win, 31 points up on the board. And gosh, I think they scored the first three drives of the game with Fitzpatrick. Maybe there's something to do with the fact that the Jaguars defense has been depleted now almost completely. But still, you've got to feel pretty good about your quarterback.
You know, look, Fitzpatrick, I wrote a song parody about this. It's called Fitzpatrick's Life. You take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and there you have Fitzpatrick's life. That's what it's like when you have Ryan Fitzpatrick as your quarterback. Yes, he put up 31 points as the quarterback against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Yes, the Jaguars are the youngest team in the league, statistically speaking. But he also threw three interceptions week one against the New England Patriots, a team you guys beat in week two. So you get the good, you get the bad, and it really doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, he's going to put on a funky shirt. He's going to have that sexy, sexy beard, and all is forgiven, or everything is celebrated even further. So, yeah, we got a little bit of the Fitz magic. We look good passing the ball. We look okay, I guess, with a little warble in my voice when it comes to running the ball. Offense isn't the problem for the Miami Dolphins, in my opinion. It's the defense that worries me and every other citizen in Perfectville out there.
So I'm actually glad that you came on the show this week, Sam, because to be honest, I haven't watched really a lick of Dolphins for maybe like 4 years because, well, I mean, I forgot they were in the league. But the thing about...
Aren't you a Bills fan?
No. They're my secondary, you know, kind of way off in the distance. Second favorite team. Yeah. Yeah, they're my side piece, right? But, you know, you got to feel good about the beard coming into this game, because if there's one thing that you know about Fitzpatrick is he stinks against good defenses and he absolutely annihilates terrible defenses. And this Seahawks pass defense is a joke show. I mean, you have to have a little confidence in that.
Well, look, I think if I read the stat correctly, the Seahawks defense this season through three games is the first defense ever to give up 1,200 yards or something along those lines. I mean, that surprises the heck out of me, especially when you guys had, you know, people like the Legion of Boom. And prior to that, you had Benny Blades or Brian Blades or Blade Runner, whoever it was, being safety for you guys way back in the day. You guys have been a good defense for a very long time. I think most people looking at this, Russell Wilson aside, attribute good defense to the Seattle Seahawks. So I read that stat, if I read it correctly, and it kind of made me shake my head like, wow, that surprises the heck out of me. And that's how the Miami Dolphins are going to win, if they are going to win, as they're going to have to pass the ball and pass it to the appropriate players on the Dolphins. I mean, Devontae Parker is a monster when he's motivated, and he's been motivated for about a season and a half now. Preston Williams, when he wants to get off the soft couch and stop being Charmin toilet paper, is also a big body that's out there that can cause some problems. And oh, by the way, for the first time in probably ever, the Miami Dolphins have a seam-ripping, just gargantuan tight end named Mike Gesicki, who catches just about everything. In fact, they need to check his gloves to make sure he doesn't have anything illegal on there, because it just seems to stick to him. So they have three big, fast, strong, able-bodied targets for Ryan Fitzpatrick to target in the passing game. It's going to be a matter of keeping him upright and making sure he throws it to the right team if they're going to have any sort of chance here against your Seattle Seahawks.
Well, you brought up the one name that I know Adam hasn't been watching any Dolphins football, but anybody who has seen Mike Gesicki these first few weeks. And he reminds you of that Jimmy Graham in his prime type tight end, where you just throw him the ball and it has this huge catch radius. And if they can't figure out a way to stop him with, I don't think that they've really had a team yet where they've had to stop a player quite like that. And so there's a lot of concern that goes for me as a Seahawks fan in that direction.
Well, yeah. And the problem with the Miami Dolphins is they're going to have to make sure that they continue to keep him a focus of their game plan. And that seems silly, because anybody who watches football right now, or if you play fantasy football, you should know who Mike Gesicki is. But even against the Jaguars, he only had two targets and one reception. Now, granted, that reception was for a touchdown and an amazing catch, but he's got to be more involved. And again, they were up big against Jacksonville, so they really didn't have to throw the ball as much, especially in the second half. I have a feeling that's going to be a little bit different against the Seattle Seahawks, so you'll probably see a lot of him. He is one of those guys that if you are playing defense for the Seattle Seahawks, you need to know where number 88 is at all times.
I'm worried about the little shifty guys, though, because going into this last game against the Cowboys, I was told to watch out for Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb. Oh, don't sleep on Michael Gallup as the number three guy. And then some dude named Cedric Wilson, who I don't even think Cowboys fans had heard of, it showed up and had a big day. So who's going to be that guy for the Dolphins?
It might be Cedric Wilson. I don't think he was actually on the Cowboys. He just kind of rolled out onto the field and wrecked shop. You know, a lot of people are high on Jakeem Grant. If you guys haven't seen Jakeem Grant, don't be alarmed. He's about 5 foot, literally. He is our punt returner, our kick returner. I don't like the guy personally. And I know that's like sacrilege if you're a Miami Dolphin to not like every single player on the team. But this guy is not only a physical midget, he is a mental midget. He'll catch the ball and punt return, shake the first defender, and then run backwards for no apparent reason. It's like, just run forward and get 12 yards and fall down. That's all you have to do. You don't have to run back to the 2 yard line and make this impossible for the Miami Dolphins to go 98 yards against a defense that has actual players on the other side. But that would probably be the guy that most people are looking at. Another name to keep in mind is the running back Myles Gaskin. Myles Gaskin is a guy that most people probably don't know. But he is our leading running back right now, and he's earned those stripes last year and this year in whatever offseason, preseason training camp that we had. He's going to get the ball a lot, not only running the ball, but also out of the backfield. He's also responsible for the best fantasy football name and get your catfish button ready, guys. That catfish! Miles Gaskin, which is a Tiger King reference and quite possibly the best fantasy football name I have ever heard in my life. But Miles Gaskin would be the guy that I want you guys to keep an eye on.
You're 100% right about that being one of the greatest fantasy football names that I've heard. No doubt about it. So you talked a little bit about offensively with the Dolphins here, Sam. Talk to me a little bit about the defense. I mean, we know about it, the corners a little bit with Xavier Howard. Like, I mean, is there anybody there, whether it be in the pass rush or on the back end of the defense, that you think could actually slow down future MVP and Super Bowl champion for a second time, Russell Wilson?
Yeah, I think if John Offerdahl were to come back and play middle linebacker next to Zach Thomas, we might have a shot. But no, that's the part that is the Achilles heel right now, which kills me because our head coach, Brian Flores, by the way, the Flores Lava is another good fantasy football team if you're looking for one. We don't do defense well. It's like we aren't getting paid to play defense. The problem is we've spent a ton of money on defense. Byron Jones from the Dallas Cowboys last season hurt his groin against the Buffalo Bills chasing Josh Allen and not catching him. So he's out for probably the third week now. Xavier Howard is still recovering from 85 knee injuries and 73 arrests in the offseason. So he's not 100%. Our third cornerback is a rookie whose last name I can't even pronounce, and it's not even Tagovailoa. So that's going to be where Russell Wilson's going to target him. Is going to be the talented yet rookie cornerback Noah Igbindin-Gogni. That's as close as I'm going to get, fellas. I'm sorry. So there's nobody that's going to stop them in the passing game in terms of turning the ball over. And when it comes to rushing the passer, they're better this season than they have been in the past. But man, they don't have pass rushers. I mean, Kyle Van Noy, we got him from New England Patriots. He's done okay. He can actually, you know, thump you and knock the ball down. He actually, I think, ended a man's life against Jacksonville, who was one of the running backs who was trying to block him on a blitz. Did not work out well for him. But that's where they really struggle. They do not have anybody on the defensive end, outside linebacker, or anywhere else on that defensive front seven that can consistently rush the passer, let alone keep somebody like Russell freaking Wilson in check. I mean, that's going to be the game plan, is how do you stop Russell Wilson? And I have a way to stop him, but I'll reveal that a little bit later during this chat.
I'm glad that you at least made an attempt at Noah's name, and I'm totally going to fix that in post-editing, and it'll just sound super clean.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
So talking about pass rush, there's really nobody to worry about? Nobody?
No, I mean, look, the only way, and I'll just say it now, the only way we stop Russell Wilson, okay, I know Chris Carson isn't playing in this game because of the cheap shot that happened in that Dallas game. And I apologize on behalf of, well, I don't apologize on behalf of Cowboys fans. It was a cheap shot. It hurt the guy. The only way we stop Russell Wilson as a Miami Dolphins organization is if, for whatever reason, Russell Wilson has to go to the hospital to check Chris Carson in and misses the team flight to Miami. That's the only way we're slowing down or stopping Russell Wilson in this game. Miami does not do, you know, mobile quarterbacks, if you want to say mobile quarterbacks. Well, I mean, if you look at our track record going back to Mike Vick, Randall Cunningham, John Elway, it's not in our culture to stop a quarterback that can use its legs. Look at our greatest quarterback of all time, Dan Marino, had 13 yards rushing. That's why his number was 13, because that's what he had his entire career, was like 13 yards rushing. Our next best quarterback, Bob Greasy, who had to wear glasses because he didn't know where to walk on the field. We don't do mobile quarterbacks well for us. We don't do mobile quarterbacks well for other people. And you look at the season this year, we have Josh Allen twice, Cam Newton twice, Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray. This is going to be a slaughter fest until they can figure out how to stop the quarterbacks that know how to run. I mean, we had Lamar Jackson last season, week one, and I think they are still scoring touchdowns against this defense. I mean, it's insane. We just don't know how to do it. It's impossible for us to figure this out. There's no one that we can really rely on, in my opinion.
So speaking of mobile quarterbacks, I'm curious, not going into this game, but just for the rest of the season, how excited for you are you for Tua on a scale of like 1 to 10?
You know, when it comes to a scale of 1 to 10 for Tua, I don't think that's a good enough scale. I mean, everyone. I don't think there's one person other than maybe Josh Rosen who is not excited about Tua Tagovailoa coming to the Miami Dolphins. They made a documentary about him. I mean, when's the last time anybody said anything nice to say about a Miami Dolphins player that wasn't named Dan Marino and or Ray Finkel? It doesn't happen. But they put out an hour-long documentary about him, which, by the way, if you watch the documentary called Tua, I don't think his brother's very happy with all the attention that Tua's getting. Just watch that. Look for that Easter egg in there. There's some times where they're really praising Tua, and his younger brother's looking at him like, can I just go play video games, please? I'm sick of this nonsense. But we're all excited. We're all waiting for the day that he can be the starting quarterback. And what's beautiful about this is that Ryan Fitzpatrick, he knows that this is going to happen. He knows it's going to happen this season. He's embracing it. He's doing everything he can possibly do to have fun while he's still a starting quarterback. And then when he needs to turn the keys over to the new guy, he's going to step into the passenger seat and be that guy. So there's no conflict. There's no age. There's nothing here that's going to cause any sort of strife. I have a prediction of when it's going to happen, but it's not going to happen until later this season, especially if Ryan Fitzpatrick continues to lead the way he's leading and lead him to victory.
So what is it that is holding Tua back from being the starter right now? I mean, what is it that they're working on? What is the thing that you kind of hear about? Because I'll be honest, when I watched his college stuff and look back on it, I kind of think he's Tyrod Taylor, to be honest. I don't know that he's ever going to be much more than that. But I'm curious to what you're hearing from the Dolphins in his development.
Well, if he's Tyrod Taylor, I would recommend he stay away from the training room when he goes to Los Angeles later this year to play the Chargers, because that's no bueno. No, I think Tua, in many ways, I think that the name that I keep seeing and hearing is Steve Young, which if he turns out to be Steve Young, we're all going to be happy. But he's a left-handed, shorter quarterback that can run and actually has accuracy that is dead on. I mean, some of the throws that he makes, we haven't seen really in a very long time, 20 years, where you're like, how did he drop that into that bucket? So I think his ceiling is way higher than Tyrod Taylor. But I think what's holding him back is A, he's a rookie. B, he dislocated his hip like he was Bo Jackson just about a year ago. Even though he's medically cleared to play, giving him extra time to heal, giving him extra time to learn behind Ryan Fitzpatrick and really just understand everything that's going on isn't a bad thing. And I think this has been the plan since the beginning. Now, when you look at the success of Joe Burrow and you look at the success of Herbert over there in Los Angeles for the Chargers, the pressure is going to be on, especially once the Miami Dolphins start to lose a few more games and it looks more and more likely like they're not going to be in the playoffs. They are going to turn that over and let Tua go. But it's not going to happen until probably the second half of the season, in my opinion, and most likely not until after the bye week. And then when we come off the bye week, we have a team called the New York Jets, which I guess is still officially a professional football team. And that's probably a good team for him to cut his teeth on, in my opinion. So I think it'll happen midseason. It'll probably happen against Adam Gase, if he's still there, and the New York Jets. And it'll happen after the bye week.
So you take the good, you take the bad when it comes to Ryan Fitzpatrick. And is there any way to predict if you're going to get the good Fitzpatrick or the bad Fitzpatrick?
Yeah, the quality of the defense he's playing. If it's a terrible defense, he rips it up. If it's a good one, he's destroyed.
Are you the Dolphins fan here that has watched all these games? I need to know from the expert.
The thing, Brandon, here's the thing. I don't need to be a Dolphins fan to know about Ryan Fitzpatrick, because if I just paid attention to the league at all, I would have seen him play for one of the 17,000 other teams that he's played for. So I'm aware of who he is.
One of the interesting stats is that I saw that he's beaten the Jaguars as the starting quarterback of six different teams. Now, if you're the owner, if you're the cons of Jacksonville Jaguars and you're like, oh, okay, we got the Dolphins. Who's our starting quarterback? Ryan Fitzpatrick, son of a catfish. You know you're losing because he's got their number twice over. No, there is absolutely no way to predict whether he's going to be good Fitzpatrick or Ryan Fitzpatrick. It just kind of plays itself out. In fact, he doesn't even know. My working theory is it's based on the color of Hawaiian t-shirt he has packed. But we don't know what that is until after the game. And as soon as he puts on the red one, I'm like, no wonder he played like catfish. He's wearing the red one. He should have worn the purple one and we would have won the game. So if he could reveal the Hawaiian shirt prior to the game, then I'd have a better, more accurate, accord of what he's going to do during the game.
And Sam, I noticed that you tagged me on another prediction video here, and I'm going to go ahead and play the audio for it, but explain who this is and where did this prediction come from?
Yeah, so the prediction that you are probably about to play is week 4, and the series, it's a little series that I developed with my daughter, who is 7 years old, Chloe Ryan, called Dolphin Game Predictions from a Kid. And all I really do is I annoy the heck out of her every single day and ask her who she thinks is going to win between the Miami Dolphins and whoever that opponent is. And no matter what she's doing, she could be playing video games, she could be riding her bike, she could be swimming in a pool. Here comes dad to annoy the heck out of her and force her to choose whether the Dolphins are going to win or lose and then what the final score is going to be. So I believe that's what you're going to see. I will say, before you play this, week 3 against Jacksonville, she predicted while she was swinging upside down in our backyard, Miami Dolphins 31, Jacksonville Jaguars 10. Final score, Miami Dolphins 31, Jacksonville Jaguars 13. So because of that, I now have people, gambling degenerates, calling me all the time wondering what her thoughts are on the Washington football team game or the Las Vegas Raiders game or the San Francisco 49ers game. So she apparently is some sort of gambling guru, and she has predicted this game, the Miami Dolphins and Seattle Seahawks.
Hi, I think the Dolphins are going to win, and the Seahawks are going to lose because they're dum-dums. And I think the score is going to be 20-10. Bye!
Well, Sam, I can't wait until she has like a paid channel that's, you know, bringing some money in so you can get a real pool and not have to go to the community pool to film these. But it's important that she brought up the dum-dum factor. And I feel bad that we've gone through a 20-minute interview now, Sam. And I didn't even ask you who would be the biggest dum-dum factor in this game between these two teams. So maybe I should have had your daughter on instead of you.
She would have been a much better guest. She probably could have taught you everything about thermodynamics at this point, too. The fact that she's 7 and she speaks 3 languages and I'm 37 and can barely comprehend one does not make for a fair fight in our household whatsoever. But that's the burden I bear, the cross I carry. The dum-dum factor, I don't think is anything more than the fact that her mother, her awful, terrible mother, is a San Francisco 49ers fan. Ooh. And has beaten to her head that the Seattle Seahawks are a dum-dum team. Now, I personally don't feel that way. I like the Seattle Seahawks. I like what you did week 2 against Cam Newton and New England Patriots. I like what you do to the San Francisco 49ers on a basically, you know, 2 times a year basis. I like Russell Wilson. How do you not like Russell Wilson? I like the Seattle Seahawks. I had one of your best running backs of all time come to one of my comedy shows recently, and I enjoyed his company as well. And of course, I'm talking about sweet Sean Alexander. No, Marshawn Lynch. And it's just a fantastic organization, and I love the city of Seattle. So I don't feel that there's a dum-dum factor when it comes to the Seattle Seahawks. That's her horrible, terrible mother speaking through my beautiful, precious 7-year-old angel.
So is that that little prediction there that she had, and knowing that her mom is a 49ers fan, is that grounds for you to somehow just, you know, take full custody at all times, you know, like, so her mom just doesn't get to see her at all? I mean, even if you're living in the same house, like, you got to like somehow separate this out. She can't be allowed to take your child like this anymore.
Well, we aren't living in the same house, and all I can say is I can't comment on ongoing legal matters there, Adam, because I'm drawing up the paperwork as we speak. I tend to agree with you. I think it's grounds for a revisiting of the custody schedule.
We have lots of listeners. If we know any judges who are listening, that we can get a favorable court, a favorable judge for this to be presided over, just we'll let you know.
It's terrible. And it's everything, right? Her mom's a Warriors fan. I'm a Los Angeles Lakers fan. Her mom is a San Francisco Giants fan. I like an actual baseball team called the Los Angeles Dodgers. Her mom's a San Jose Sharks fan. I'm a Los Angeles Kings fan. So we don't align on just about anything. And my poor daughter has to sit in there in between. We play the 49ers the week after we play you guys. I'm curious to see what her prediction is going to be on that one, because she might get grounded if she says the wrong thing.
He's Sam Marcou. Follow him at Perfectville. Listen to the Perfectville podcast, or at least, you know, pass it on to your Miami Dolphins friends. And Sam, do you got any comedy coming up?
Yeah, comedy since the world ended has been a struggle to get to, but I do have a show. If you're in Northern California, you have to be a Seattle Seahawks fan and you want to come join us. I'll be in Patterson, California. Don't ask me where Patterson is, but they allow for comedy to happen. April 21st. I think that's the next gig that I have there. I will be down in Los Angeles filming my first special. Actually, I haven't even told anybody that. I don't know why I'm telling you guys that, but I am later this year, actually inside of a church. So assuming I don't catch on fire, I'll have my first comedy special inside of a church, which should be a lot of fun sometime in 2021. And other than that, no, just kind of laying low, staying home, doing outdoor comedy until the weather turns, and enjoying the Miami Dolphins go 7-9 once again, and the Seattle Seahawks go to the playoffs for the 17th million year in a row.
Breaking news on our show. We're going to be on that Sam Marcou fan blog now with this interview, just because of that little nugget you gave us, Sam.
Well, there you go. I've always enjoyed your guys' podcast. I'm not a Seattle Seahawks fan per se, but I'm a fan of the work that you two guys do. Brandon, you being an amazing Seahawks fan. Adam, you being a Buffalo Bills / Los Angeles Rams fan. It's just fantastic the way you guys come together. I've seen video and photo evidence of it, so don't try to deny it, Adam. But you guys are an amazing show. You guys have always been kind to me. And other than this week, I typically root for the Seahawks.
Sam, once again, thanks for coming on. Adam, There's one moment of this game that we forgot to discuss between the Cowboys and Seahawks, and I meant to talk about it along with the DK Metcalf brain fart, because I didn't think I could have been any more upset watching a particular play until I saw Tristan Hill try and twist Chris Carson's leg off in this game.
My God, that was one of the more Bush League plays I've seen. And I'm not saying that I haven't seen worse. I mean, I've watched the Haynesworth stomp.
It's up there, though, with Ndamukong Suh doing his thing. Haynesworth, yep. I mean, it puts him in that category.
Oh, man, my sports hate couldn't be higher for Tristan Hill. Now, what I hope is that nobody goes out and tries to hurt him intentionally out of retribution, like an offensive lineman somewhere or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, somebody else in the league that is going to kind of police the league. I hope that doesn't happen. Now, if the football gods maybe take his knee in a non-contact injury, just cutting in the middle of the field, I don't know. Maybe it's deserved.
Then because you can attribute it to the football gods.
That was so dirty. He was literally trying to hurt him. And then it didn't help that he got lucky, quote unquote, that his other teammate fell on Carson, kind of pinning him. So his, you know, dirty ass gator roll did more damage than maybe it would have.
Now, most Cowboys fans were cool. I saw some Cowboys fans also sticking up for Carson, saying, hey, that is not cool. We don't want to see that from our guys ever. Even no. Going as far to say, I'd be fine if Tristan Hill got cut from this team. And I think he was a third round draft pick. So that would be a big move. But I did see one Cowboys fan say, well, it was his momentum that carried him through that tackle. Yeah, momentum doesn't stop you from clenching with your arms. And also your shoulders tend to slow down momentum. So you do. I mean, I know how momentum works.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think this guy is a momentous tool bag that came up with that theory that it was just momentum, because you're right. He intentionally, once Carson was down, like latched on and then began rolling. It's not like in the mix of the play, he was kind of moving that direction. No, he like comes down on top of him. And then when they're down, he starts rolling like a douche balloon.
I'm waiting to see. It sounds like the NFL is not considering suspending him, which they should, at least a game, but should be a heavy fine in addition to his fine that he got for going helmet to helmet on Russell Wilson.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there was that one, right? Which, look, sometimes those plays happen in the course of a game, and that one felt a little less intentional.
It felt more intentional after it, because it came after the Carson thing.
Yeah.
But
I don't know. He's got a ways to go before he's in, you know, the Vontaze Burfict category here. Right. But, you know, that's a hell of a start.
He's on the radar.
Absolutely. He's a guy that I will actively sports hate for a long time now.
You want to talk a little NFC West?
Yeah, man. Interesting day in the NFC West.
Yeah. We're number one, man.
We are. I'm not surprised.
San Francisco got their win, but the Cardinals went down. The Rams went down after almost coming back and maybe arguably should have won that game.
I don't know what the hell happened in that game, because I went down to town from the cabin and ordered breakfast, you know, slash lunch, and it took an hour and a half for it to come out. So I got to watch.
You saw them up 28-3.
28-3 with like 7 and change or 6 and change left in the third quarter. And I'm like, yeah, okay, well, I'll head back up to the cabin and do a little work and, you know, blah, blah, get ready for the Hawks game. By the 20-minute drive from there to the cabin, somehow they were down.
Did you see the pass interference that they called late in the game? It was definitely pass interference, but it's one of those plays where the defender kind of sticks on him and rides him down the field about 10 yards and then lets go of him. And maybe, you know, could have been in position to make the catch, but didn't, obviously because of the pass interference. It's one that you don't see called a lot, but they called it late, and it was on, I think it was on fourth down, and it gave the Bills an entire new set of downs to ultimately score the winning touchdown.
So I did not see it, but from your description, this is what I get out of it. The guy tried to physically tackle the receiver before the ball got there, and they threw the flag, and whiny ass Rams fans are complaining because they think it was uncatchable, because He tried to tackle the freaking receiver before the ball got there.
I don't know if I wouldn't characterize it as him trying to tackle him, but it was him locking on after 5 yards and riding him down the field.
So locking on, like what?
Yeah. Locking up with him shoulder to shoulder.
Okay. So did he like grab him with his hands or did he just run next to him? Like, what do you mean by locked him up?
Yeah. There was contact between the two of them beyond the 5 yards.
I don't know why I need to know the ins and outs of this. All I know is that the Rams cheat all the time. So it doesn't surprise that they tried to cheat on that play. And it was probably righteous.
The one thing that I was impressed by watching a little bit of the 49ers was that Mullins didn't actually look like garbage like he did when he came in against Garoppolo. And maybe that's to be expected after a week of practice and maybe not being ready to go into the game. Because really in that game after coming in against Garoppolo, he hit one dude who was wide open in zone.
Coming in against Garoppolo.
Where he came in the game for Garoppolo. Which team were they playing last week?
Okay, because you said that twice where Nick Mullins came in against Garoppolo. Yeah, so that'll be a fun one to edit. Good luck. Or maybe we just leave it in so everybody knows how the sausage is made.
Everybody just knows I screwed that one up.
Yeah, it's okay. He didn't play against Garoppolo.
No, he was playing for Garoppolo against what other team? And I think that was what was in my mind is that he was playing against another team. And I was just in my mind trying to work it out really quickly of who he was playing, and I couldn't pull it out.
It doesn't matter.
But I've now given myself enough time to realize it was the New York Jets that he came in against.
Right. And then they played, who did they have this week that they beat up on?
The Jets?
The Giants. Yeah. So the Niners played the Giants this last week. And that was frustrating. I actually picked the Giants in that game.
I did too. I knew I was going to pick either the Cardinals or the Niners to lose. I picked the wrong one.
Yeah. Look, my big mistake of the week, or really of this, of the week, was that I forgot that Daniel Jones isn't good. Like for a second, I let my brain tell me, from hearing all these other people say that Daniel Jones, look, he's actually good. Who knew? Kind of like the Josh Allen thing, mm-hmm. but like way sooner with no evidence. And I don't know what I was thinking. He's not good.
He's not good. And I thought maybe he could manage against a depleted 49ers defense to not throw interceptions and put his team in a deficit. But no, it doesn't matter if the players on the defense are good or bad. He can find a way to turn the ball over.
Exactly. So
that leads us into Pick'em. So congrats to all those teams that correctly picked the 49ers, I guess, instead of picking the Giants.
Yeah, I don't know that you get congratulated for that. I think you should have to live with yourself for that.
Well, 12 points got the win this week. So some people definitely struggled in terms of the standings. And
oh, I know I did. Yeah, that was not a good week because once again, I decided that I'd spot everybody the Thursday night game. It's just, I think it might just be tradition from here on just out.
miss out on Thursday, huh?
Yeah.
I came away with 8.
Okay. Well, I was looking mine up here real quick.
You got 10.
Holy Hannah, really?
You got 10 picks right.
Oh, well, there you go. The last time I looked at my picks, it depends on where the scores are at what point in the games, right? Where it just didn't look good.
Looking at the standings, Fernando Tejada holding on to the top spot. He got 11 picks correct this week. In second place, Sideline Sockeye, who won week 2. And Tuga Hawk, who came in, he's also in second place with 37 points. And then, let's see, we'll pick out the good names who are in, because there's a bunch of people in there in behind them with 36 points. Tom Brady's deflated balls. Lock it and put it in your pocket.
That has to be Hong Kong Hawk, is it not?
That's a good question.
He's always taking the shots at Brady's balls.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So before we get to welcoming the flock, also, I need to re-announce last week's winner because there's a big pick'em controversy last week in week 2.
Oh, okay. I had seen some of the dust up, but I didn't know exactly. I didn't get into the nooks and crannies of it.
Yeah. Well, I announced the biggest little flocker as the winner. And he said, hey, your tiebreaker might not be working right because I changed my pick right before the Monday night game. And we've now established that you get your picks in first. That's the tiebreaker. I did not notice that there's a little star in the standings next to the person who actually was selected as the winner. I just assumed it was the top person listed when I hit the sort button for the week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that one's on me. It was Sideline Sockeye who was the winner of week two.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm glad that you got Sideline Sockeye there, you know, due credit here. I mean, basically, you Tyrod Taylored him.
Pretty much. But the winner. So the winner of week two, Sideline Sockeye. The winner of week three, Unlimited Flocker. He got 12 correct, tied with six others. So congrats to TJ on the week three win. And I have confirmed Unlimited Flocker has the star by the points. So there's your winner.
Okay. All right. So for reals. Mr. Unlimited Flocker.
Yeah. Unless TJ comes back to me and says that he changed his pick like the day of the Monday night game, then I'm going to be baffled and I won't be able to trust CBS and I will just still have to go with whoever has the star next to their number.
Yeah. And we won't know the real reasons why.
Yeah. Just that's how they pick it.
It's just how it's done. Yeah. Well, this is turning out great. To the winner this week, Unlimited Flocker there. I was only two away from you and I gave you one. So, but if I were to be honest, I probably would have picked Jacksonville anyway. So I don't think it really matters.
Most people pick Jacksonville. I think a lot of us wanted Miami to be 0-3 going into this game.
Now I want Miami to be 0-0 everything every year.
Do you realize if the Seahawks, do you realize once the Seahawks get the win against Miami, mm-hmm. It'll be, I think, four straight years of wins on the East Coast at 10 a.m. Pacific start times.
Right. Yeah.
No losses for about 4 years.
Yeah. No, I remember that being a storyline back in the day.
Yeah.
And you would even try to bring it up like at times.
It was because it was just hammered into our mind as Holmgren era Seahawks fans that if you went to the East Coast as a Seahawks team, it was going to be a loss about nine times out of 10.
Okay. That I understand. I get that. I mean, but to blame it on the start time in the East Coast, like that was the reason that it was always a lot like that. I couldn't stomach. That's why I always cried BS. The travel's not that hard. Uh-huh. I mean, just get up and play the game. This is no big deal. Just do it.
We have a new prize edition for the Pick'em League. An Ugo Amadi prize pack, Adam.
Hey, all right. That feels fitting because Amadi has been balling out, man.
He did. This game was huge. He had the 2-point conversion tackle that kept the Cowboys from getting the going up by a field goal late. That was huge. He had two pass breakups in the game. He had three stops as mm-hmm. far as his tackles. So it was a big Amadi game.
I'm not going to lie, Brandon. Over the last 2 years, I find myself falling in love with Amadi. Like, I really do. He's becoming one of the guys that, like, I would be devastated if they just didn't let him play or he got traded away or something like that. Yeah. Like, I want more Amadi in my life.
Oh, you're getting it now. And it's unfortunate that it had to be injuries that ends up, like,
right,
putting him in the starting lineup. But now we see he's out there making plays. And it was this prize pack that was donated by executive producer Brian Shaw. So thanks to Brian. It's a Ugo Amadi hat with the logo, the Ugo logo that looks like a football. It's very cool. 2XL t-shirt, a set of wristbands, and some stickers. So that will be among the prizes if you choose.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's great.
And if you just want to go to the website, it's uamadi.com to get whatever you want.
Okay, so this is the part of the show where I ask you to cut out everything that you just said, mm-hmm. not announce to anybody that you have the Ugo Amadi prize pack, and then just give it to me.
Just send it to you?
Because I love him, and I want it.
Well, I can put in an order for you, dude.
Yeah, I know. I don't get to benefit from cronyism anywhere else in my life, so like I thought maybe this might be the place, but no, can't even do it here.
Well, I'll leave it up to executive producer Brian Shaw if he just wants to mail it to you, and I'll designate you holder of the prizes.
Okay.
And it may not go out to anybody.
All right. Hey, look, I just saying, I don't know what's going to happen to it. It's tough for me to really say, but If you don't see it, I mean, I can look into it or something. It's hard telling not knowing.
Let's welcome some members of the flock.
Heck yeah.
A welcome to the flock to Jerry from Hong Kong, who came in with the $5 a month for the entire year. He's locked it in, and Jerry says, "Hey there, after 2 years of blissful and enjoyable freeloading, it's time for me to pay my dues. I love the podcast. It keeps me going during workouts and sometimes at work, but don't tell my boss. I love the infallible cheerleading for Russell Wilson, the realistic takes on the Hawks' weak points, and, of course, Adam's rants. Go Hawks, and
catfish
the Rams, Jerry from Hong Kong."
Jerry knows all the right notes to play, like, clearly. Look, I think it's really important that we now know where Jerry is, and we've checked in, and we have him in the flock, so that him and Hong Kong Hawk can, like, find each other on game days, man.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine there's too many dudes that you can sit and talk Seahawks football with. And when that other potential dude could be either Jerry or Bloomy, like, over there, like, the quality of conversation would be off charts. So I think they just need to make that happen.
Maybe he was a recruit of Hong Kong Hawk.
Oh.
Maybe Bloomy is responsible for this happening.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Don't give him that kind of credit. Okay. You know where that goes. Right to his head.
I'll stop. Jason Kyler, you know, came in at $36 with the $3 a month annual donation. Says, "I woke up this morning, got a cuppa, took care of the kids, then walked to my office to listen to my daily news podcast show while I did some work. And of course, it was about some dang partisan
catfish
conflict again that I can't
catfish
handle listening to right now." Okay, I got all caps out of my system. However, a tiny little blue and green nugget of heaven refreshed onto my phone, and I couldn't tell you how happy I was to get my weekly dose of Go Hawks this morning. So thanks, guys. I'm dedicating my yearly subscription to Bruce, Blair, and all of the West Coast and its recovery from these Skip Bayless-like fires. Also, there's no way that I'm going to get close to winning the pick'em this year, or any, because I hadn't bothered to pick the Thursday night game in time.
Hey, I feel you.
Your brother Jason.
Yeah.
So I wanted to take this opportunity to have my pick'em name shared on air. Michael Dick Tixon. Michael Dick Tixon. Michael Dick Tixon. Three times, apparently. Thanks for everything. Yeah. From Jason.
Look, clearly Jason and I are kindred spirits. We can't pick a Thursday night game. And he's one of the few people that actually, I thought that story would get a lot more run out of the listeners, to be honest.
It turned into a pick'em league name. What do you expect?
No, there just wasn't a ton of conversation about it. I think everybody was just, it was more ashamed for me than, like, yeah, but I love it.
Could be. Yeah. Ivy upgrades to the annual option. So thanks to Ivy. And she came in and said, "I'm going to be unemployed for 6 months starting in December and did not want to fall into freeloader status. So I'm opting for the annual subscription. Go Hawks."
Hey, go Hawks. Look, I think we could make a freeloader exception if, you know, like, there's going to be months of non-workage coming up for you. Like, maybe you could just take that time off and we're all going to be good with it.
I'm not saying anything bad. The planning ahead thing is cool. Like, if you can make it work and that's how it works, then that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, you know, there comes a point where I do have a conscience and feelings on the inside that I start to feel a little guilty.
Right.
We might have found it.
It is there. We have identified it.
Yeah.
Big thanks to Ivy. Thanks to Christina in Auburn, who came in with via PayPal for $12.12. And so thanks to Christina.
Absolutely. Thank you a ton, man.
And I got stickers and an envelope ready for stickers to go out to Christina, along with a patch, I think.
Oh, right on, man.
Got Mark Gretzinger in at $3 a month, says, "Glad to be back in the flock. I went off during the off season because money is tight and I am a cheapskate. This is my favorite podcast. I talk it up to any Hawks fan I meet. Keep up the amazing work. Go Hawks."
Hey, man, go Hawks. I appreciate that. That's another way to not be a freeloader, is to, you know, pimp us out a little bit. But I understand, you know, seasonal flockers, you know, the snowbirds out there, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Roger came in $5 a month via getintheflock.com. "Hey, just want to say thanks for an awesome podcast about our beloved Seahawks. Adam always makes me believe we are going 16-0, and I am convinced that every team we meet is hot garbage. Went on a trip as a lone 12 with 9 Niners fans and a bunch of random others last year to see the Hawks at Niners. Guess who owned the bus on the way back to the hotel? Finally decided to stop freeloading after a year or so. Please use my money for beer.
Catfish!
The Car 9 Rams. Go Hawks.
Hey, go Hawks, man. Hey, I've no problems using your money for beer. We're in. I appreciate the suggestion. I probably would have done it anyway, so.
I took Roger's advice. I got some of the Elysian contact haze. Have you tried that?
No.
It's good stuff. Check it out.
Yeah. Nice.
Not a paid promotion. It was just at Costco on the shelf, and I said, I'm going to try this.
All right.
Joshua Dawes in at $5 a month at getintheflock.com. Welcome to the flock to Joshua.
Hey, welcome, bud.
And Mark Misselbrook, he gave us a raise from $5 up to $12.80. He said, thought it was about time I stepped up a tier and joined the heroes in the Ring of Honor. Wanted to do a throwback and mention a past episode quote that always makes me laugh. So just after we won the Super Bowl, Adam predicted Tom Cable as our next head coach. you remember that, don't you?
I surely do. And hey, man, like a missile, Mr. Misselbrook there took a shot. Hey, look, he's right. I was wrong.
Keeps me smiling, he says. And Adam, I know the Seahawks make you drink and say dumb stuff, but sometimes it's just not worth it. Take a dose of Brandon's sensible medicine. So with that, there's only one thing left to say. Good morning, and in case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night, and go Hawks.
Yeah, go Hawks, man. Yeah, he's right. I mean, there's times I could just keep some of this to myself.
I don't think it was that crazy of a thought at the time.
No, not a time. It just was dead ass wrong.
I mean, now it's going to be Brian Schottenheimer.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, maybe. I guess if you're into coaches with visors, sure.
I mean, it's going to be 5 years from now. Maybe he gets sniped by another team before he has a chance to take over.
You think Pete's going to allow that to happen?
I don't know if he has a choice if another team offers him a gig.
Oh, sure you do. Look at how the Patriots have done with McDaniels.
Yeah, just keep winning Super Bowls, and then the teams are just going to get tired of waiting, and they'll pick the other guy.
Well, that, and then they paid him a boatload of freaking money to stay.
Yeah, probably.
They did. It was a huge contract.
That's one way to do it. Yeah. And finally, a big thanks to our executive producer, Dustin Mock. I mentioned Brian Shaw earlier with the prize giveaway. Dustin, always in there, executive producering too. Appreciate you both.
Oh, man. They're killer, dude. You couldn't ask for better executive producers.
No, I mean, getting prizes for the show.
They let me kind of say what I want, do what I want. Like, that's nice. It's just nice having good ownership and management above you.
Also, it is the final day by the time you're hearing this. If you're hearing it as soon as it comes out, to go to tinypiecesofseahawksstuff.com. We will pick the winner on the next show, but got to have that in by the end of the month here. And then we'll have another tiny piece for October, but got to get it in before the end of September.
Yep. Hit it up and we'll get that sent out to everybody. And somebody will be a proud owner of a piece of Amaro Darbo things.
And Russell Wilson and Tyler Lockett.
No, you missed the highlight.
I feel like you did highlight that.
Yeah.
Steelers standout wide receiver Amaro Darbo.
Right.
Well, before moving on to do better and better at life, hey, wanted to give a shout out to Noelle Oliveira, part of the Hollywood Seahawks fan group. She's a graphic designer. NoelleOliveira.com, and she's got a cool Etsy store too. One of our flockers was letting me know that a graphic designer in search of work. So help out a fellow Seahawks fan there.
Heck yeah, man. And if you haven't checked out her stuff, like, do it. You know, there's the people that have that kind of talent, not me, are very impressive all the way around.
Got one email before we get into do better and better at life. A member of the flock who I hope is doing well. Says, hey guys, my name's Joel Statton. I have been a Seahawks fan for over 25 years, and I've recently been put on a ventilator due to COVID, and life is hard right now. I haven't been able to watch any games or keep up with much, but I always look forward to listening in on your podcast. It truly is the highlight of my day. I don't think I have much longer, honestly. The doctors never give me a solid answer. I was going to ask if y'all could give me a shout out on your next podcast for me to all my friends and family, since none of them can really be here with me anyway. Puts a ha-ha in there, and yeah, a definite bummer that folks having to stay away, especially in those kind of situations. He says, anyway, keep up the amazing job, guys. I really appreciate being able to listen in. Go Hawks from Joel. So maybe we need to send a little hawker to Joel.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, clearly, I mean, his Hocker will be on the ascension here going forward. There's no doubt about it. I mean, somebody that can keep those kind of high spirits, like, throughout struggling a little bit here, like, it's obviously a stand-up dude. Yeah, we're thinking about you, Joel, man. I know you're going to be feeling a lot better shortly. Look, this whole, like, oh, I don't know if it's going to be the end or not. Well, it's not. So just, you know, buck it up. You're going
to
be fine.
Yeah, there's a whole season of football that you have to watch this year.
Yeah, we can't do it without you. So, like, it's important that you stick around. Okay, just keep the breathing up. We like that. And look, man, we really appreciate you bringing us in and, you know, spending your time there with us and listening to the show. And looking forward to, you know, getting that email that says that you're back up on the mend and things are looking up. And go Hawks, buddy.
Go Hawks. And yes, Hakra coming your way, Joel. On to do better and better at life.
All right, man. I had to kind of search for do better this week. I've been struggling a little bit with it. But yeah, I've seen a few things pop up in over the course of the last day or so when people are talking about the different things that are the different power rankings and who's what teams are good, what teams are for real, who's a contender, who's not. And I keep seeing this come up again and again and again. And it's some sort of fallacy that seems to be propagated around the whole national media about football that somehow if anybody in their right mind has in their power rankings, contender rankings, whatever the hell they call them, the Green Bay Packers is a better team than the Seattle Seahawks, you're doing it freaking wrong. Okay. Like they can't rely on Devontae Adams forever. Like all those other no name receivers, you know,
they won without him against the Saints,
but they can't do it forever. And the Saints are not good. Drew Brees' arm fell off last year. It's not there anymore. Like they're in real trouble. The Saints are, I know nobody wants to hear that, but somehow they keep forgetting that Russell Wilson basically owns Aaron Rodgers in every big moment, like for the most part. Sure. And I'm sick of it. I don't want to see another Green Bay Packers logo over top of a Seattle Seahawks logo. Get on board. The Packers are not as good as the Seahawks. It's not even close. And do better.
Yeah, well, that's how you know it's a bad list. So at least now we have the way of identifying the good lists from the bad lists.
Oh, okay. So the Green Bay Packers are the canary in the coal mine for bad lists.
Exactly.
All right. Well, now we know.
Now Thanks. We know. I wish we had a canary in the coal mine for snitches, because my do better is for...
It's usually if you see a dude with stitches, then you know.
Well, I'm not going to say that somebody needs stitches because I'm not going to promote that. But it is a Cowboys fan that is a snitch. And this came from a post that I came across. One of our listeners pointed out to me that someone in the Idaho area had recently been snitched on. The post reads... My mother and father-in-law here have recently been snitched on. The crime, being too excited to watch the Seahawks win. Please understand that I know 2:00 in the afternoon is an unreasonable time to be louder than normal. That is not the question. What is in question is what was different this particular Sunday. After all, the Seahawks have won at least 9 games every year for a decade, right?
So there's a lot of opportunity for noise.
Lots of opportunity for noise. This is a tradition in the household, but yet there was attached to this post was a citation from, and I think a summons to appear before the court for a noise complaint. And he found out what the issue was. He says, then it dawned on me. I know someone who lives close by who may have a special reason to hate joy and celebration on this day. Perhaps someone who has not known more than 2 playoff wins in over 20 years. A team who is ashamed year after year by mediocre play and failure. A Dallas Cowboys fan. On this particular Sunday, the Seahawks were a mere 30 minutes into their third win of the season against who else but the Dallas Cowboys. Upon being notified of the citation poor mom and dad received, I reached out to said fan and neighbor. While clearly admitting they were in fact the guilty party, the reasoning is somewhat muddled. I've included the full transcript as well. The text is posted, and then apparently he was blocked soon after on the conversation. But yes, finishes off with a Go Hawks. Some dirty Cowboys fan, when they were making noise, hooping and hollering, I think there was maybe an air horn being blown, decided that they'd had enough because it was their Cowboys getting beat, and file apparently not just, you know, called the police to complain, but called to press charges. And so now going to have to go and stand up in front of the judge. And so for the dirty snitching Cowboys fan, do better.
Yeah, do better. Like, that's ridiculous. Like, hey, Brent and I talk about this all the time on the podcast about sports hate.
Yeah.
And I get it. It's annoying when the team that you can't really stand wins and is winning over your team, and you have to listen to those fans, you know, talk all the noise, right?
Right.
But hey, it's part of being a fan. And really, this is where you don't blur the line between sports and reality. Okay. This is why you can put all this irrational bullshit
catfish
into sports, because it doesn't really matter and it should be fine. But now you have a neighborly dispute on your hands and the police involved, of all people. Number one, don't ever hardly call the police. Like, there's not many times that you actually need to call the police. And you should know when those are. This is not one of them.
And yes, I realize I may not have all of the information of the entire story. I don't have the side of the Cowboys fan, but if there hasn't been a moment where you go over to your neighbor's house and you go, you know, on every Sunday, it kind of, you know, the air horn is a little much, and that's it, gets the dogs barking and, you know, everybody riled up in the house, and it takes them a time to settle down. It would really be cool if you didn't do that.
Like, yeah,
if that happened and then you didn't stop, then you're the jerk.
Right. Exactly. I don't get it.
I don't think that happened in this case. I think they went straight to the police, called it in, and now I hope they get one of those judges that says, this is stupid. Why are you wasting my time? Get out of the courtroom.
Yeah, dude, that's all Bush League right there.
Yeah, just like Tristan Hill. You know what? If you have the opportunity, if the judge does take the case, I would bring the video of Tristan Hill twisting Chris Carson's knee in as evidence to offer up at the hearing and saying, this should be allowed because of this garbage right here.
The Cowboys coaches are dirty. Their ownership is dirty. Clearly their players are dirty. Look at what they do here to Chris Carson, and their fans are dirty. Look, I mean, this is what he's trying to do. He's trying to throw me under the bus, make me be fined. This whole fan base and organization is Bush League. And so you must throw it out. If that fits, then you must quit.
On to Better at Life.
All right, man. My Better at Life than Skip Bayless this week is for Bill's Mafia. And hey, look, after I was, you know, got the drive by from Sam Marcoux as well as being a Bills fan, and then somehow a Rams fan in there too. I guess that was because I lost a couple bets there.
I think it was because of your appearance in a Rams jersey in a certain video a couple of years back.
I wasn't willing, but I mean, it happened. But yes, for Bills Mafia, I thought this was very funny. They put out something on Twitter, and it's called the Josh Allen Apology Form. And it's, you know, from Josh to, and you send it to, you know, whoever you've seen over the years that, you know, have had a problem with Josh Allen, and, you know, and you had those terrible top hot takes, right? Uh-huh. So you can basically, they give you check marks as to why you're sorry for saying is bad. Like, what was it that was making you say that he was bad? Okay.
So what are some of these available options?
Yeah. So here are the options. And one was, I just had a gut feeling and I was wrong. And so that's innocuous. I like that. That's cool.
Sure.
Another one is, I am biased against the Bills. And like, obviously, like, there's a whole state of Florida that's that way. So I get that. But, you know, then the third one that I think is a little more kind of in the range of just, you know, kind of innocuous is, I didn't watch him in college. And look, that's fair. I mean,
yeah, who watches Wyoming college football?
Yeah. But some of these were pretty funny. And one was, I only looked at his 40 time and height. And another was, Twitter convinced me he was a bust, which, there you go. Like, you know, if it's happened on Twitter,
that one's probably going to get checked a lot.
Yeah. Yep. So don't listen to the Twitter people. But the last one was my favorite, and it was, I miss Jim Kelly and I understand. Like, so I thought that was pretty funny. And then at the bottom, you kind of sign it with the next check box, which is, I will hereby respect Josh Allen, and I will not talk down on the future All Pro and Super Bowl champion. Ooh. Won't be this year. He's a Super Bowl champion, but, you know, cause we will be, but maybe someday after Russ is out of the league.
Yeah, he's got lots of time.
Mm-hmm.
If Josh Allen also plays till he's 45, he'll have, what, 3 years of time?
Yeah.
After Russell Wilson goes?
Yeah. And at the bottom, it says, your apology needs to be as loud as your disrespect was. I love it. I think that's a great, great little jab at people with a sense of humor and everything behind it. I enjoyed it very much. So to Bills Mafia, better at life than skipping.
This was an entire segment just to humble brag about how right you were about Josh Allen, I think.
Not saying, I'm just saying.
My better at life than Skip Bayless is for former Seahawks receiver Jermaine Kearse, who announced his retirement on Tuesday. He wrote in a post.
Catch that.
He did. He wrote in a post on Instagram, says it's never really easy writing posts like this. I'm not a big announcement type of guy. Trying to find all the right words to say to sum up my experiences over the past decade isn't an easy feat, so I'm going to try and keep this short and sweet. After 8 years playing in the NFL, I'm leaving the game feeling extremely grateful and content with what I was able to accomplish out there on the field, not only for myself, but for my family as well. Going through some extreme highs and some extreme lows has taught me a lot about myself, and by the grace of God, he was able to pull me through the rough times, and in the end, all those experiences were all worth it. I want to thank my wife, Marissa Kearse, for being the incredible woman she is. Thank you for keeping me sane during the tough times, and thank you for pushing me to be a better man. I couldn't have done it without you. Thank you to my family for your endless support, and I love you guys so much. Thank you to all my teammates. You guys made this whole experience what it was. I had so much fun out there with you guys. I love y'all. Seattle, as a hometown kid, it was a complete honor to represent you guys out there on the field. Thank you so much for your endless support throughout my football career. It was an honor to put on that Hawks uniform, and I'm so grateful I was able to help bring our first Super Bowl home, something we will never forget. I'm looking forward to what God has planned for me in this next chapter of this thing called life. But I can assure you, it involves a lot of time with my family and a lot of golf. See you on the course near you. Thank you, and I love you all. God bless. From Jermaine. And Adam, when you hear Jermaine Kearse, you think of the catch in the NFC Championship game against the 49ers. You think of the catch in the NFC Championship game to win the game against the Green Bay Packers. You think of the clutch catch right inside the 5 yard line at Super Bowl 49. You think of his catch in Super Bowl 48, where he just bounces off of dudes, four different guys making tackles and going into the end zone. Jermaine Kearse, he has some of the best moments in a Seahawks uniform. And for that, Jermaine Kearse, better at life than Skip Bayless.
Oh, without question. He will never be forgotten because of that. Like, you can't go back through this Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll era football team and watch the highlights of what they accomplished and not see Jermaine Kearse stick out in a great way. Right. Definitely a guy that I love the heck out of watching him play, you know, got the most out of a career as a guy who's undrafted. I mean, that's pretty good. Like, for sure. That's a hell of a career for a guy who was undrafted.
8 years in the league. Yeah.
I think the average, length of a career is like 2.5 years or something like that.
It's somewhere around three.
Yeah. And so he definitely outdid that. And can't thank him enough for his time here in Seattle. And I definitely wish him the best going forward. I hope that handicap keeps coming down for him.
Get that golf handicap down, be taken. So we can be rooting for him to take down like Tony Romo down on the golf course.
Yeah. Romo, Curry, you know, those guys,
Steph Curry.
Yeah, is
you're switching sports on me. So I was trying to think, like, Vinny Curry from the Eagles, is he a great golfer?
Yes. Yes. He has a really great short game. You'd think he'd be, you know, a long ball guy being a bigger guy, but no.
Del Greco probably out there chopping it up still.
Oh, you know he is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like John Fraley said on Twitter, if Jermaine Kearse, Adam, ever has to buy a beer in Seattle, that is a disgrace to Seahawks fans everywhere. That should never happen.
Indeed. And so if you see Jermaine Kearse out and about in Seattle and he looks thirsty, buy the man a beer.
And with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.